Hello, and welcome to Critics Talk. I'm Jacob Davis. Today, I am talking with Greg Allen, the founder of the Neo-Futurists, and I'm going to be discussing a new play that he directed at Mary Archie at Angel Island called Ibsen's Ghosts. Say hello, Greg.
Hi there.
Now, you have a very long and storied career, including several modernist adaptations. You've worked with some of the lesser-known pieces of Samuel Beckett. You've done adaptations of Wojciech and The Trial. You know that, of course, but I'm saying it for them.
Yeah.
And you've also done a lot of work with Ibsen. And before I start to talk to you about this specific adaptation that you have going on now at Mary Archie, I was wondering if you could tell me what it is that you find attractive about Henrik Ibsen's work.
There's so much. I mean, Ibsen's so incredible in terms of what a vast expanse his career crossed, starting from. In college, I did The Wild Duck. At the O'Neill, I did Peer Gynt. And then when I came to the Neo-Futurists, one of my shows about, 15 years ago, was called The Last 2 Minutes of the Complete Works of Henrik Ibsen. So building on my already interest in Ibsen, I wanted to do absolutely everything Ibsen had ever written. Because one of the things I really noticed about Ibsen was that every single act, much less every single play, ends with this thundering climax. And he's just master of kind of the jaw-droppingly shocking climax. And so it made a lot of sense to me, if I was going to do something with the works, the entire oeuvre of Ibsen, to do literally just the last 2 minutes of every play. When I signed on for that show, I didn't realize Ibsen had actually written 26 plays.
Indeed.
Some of which have never even been translated into English. But so starting from his early stuff, which is based in, you know, Norwegian folklore and is
sort of the romanticism of the early 19th century or the
mid 19th century.
Well, it reached Norway by the mid 19th
century. Yeah, right, exactly. Getting to the point where, you know, till through, of course, the high Ibsen that everybody knows, Doll's House, Had a Gobbler, Wild Duck. Enemy of the People, in there with, you know, the supreme height of realism, to the point over at the other end where he gets to Little Eyolf and When We Dead Awaken, which is much more expressionist in nature, that there's this amazing arc through the entire work of Ibsen. And yet one of the things he maintained were these thundering kind of jaw-dropping climaxes. So I've always, since doing the last 2 minutes, I've really been fascinated by Ibsen. And the one climax that always really shocked me was the climax of Ghosts. That was always the one that really kind of blew away the others. So that was why I latched onto the idea of adapting and directing Ghosts.
Excellent. And why do you think that so many people enjoy playing around with Ibsen? Because in the past few years, there's been Hedatron by Elizabeth Merriweather that was done by Sideshow at Steppenwolf's Garage. There's The Further Adventures of Hedda Gabler by Jeff Witte, Viaduct did. All of these recent plays that mess around with Ibsen. What do you think the attraction is there for contemporary playwrights to want to play with him and revisit him?
I mean, I think it's true of any kind of dated masters, or even that, for that matter, masterpieces. I mean, people are constantly playing around with Shakespeare. There's something about Ibsen where if you just read the plays straight out, I would kind of hazard a guess that they are a tad dated. I mean, for instance, of course, Ghosts focuses on syphilis, which is not really a contemporary concern for us anymore, and blasphemy and, you know, all sorts of things that are not really contemporary issues. But the play is amazing. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people look to Ibsen as this master playwright, but at the same time realize that doing the pieces verbatim doesn't necessarily do them justice, and can seem like dusty old classics, but there's still really something there. So I think people tend to adapt Ibsen. You know, I did my 7-hour production of Strange Interlude, Eugene O'Neill's 350-page nine-act show at the Goodman, where similarly, like, no one in their right mind would touch that with a 50-foot pole. But with coming from the right perspective, it can be an amazing piece of art. So O'Neill, a lot of 19th century stuff, it needs a little updating so that that people are a little more engaged and inspired by what they're experiencing.
And we've seen that sort of thing happening too recently with Strindberg and Chekhov. Strindberg. Sideshow did another show recently playing around with Chekhov.
I was I worked with Conor McPherson on the production of Dance of Death up at Writers.
Oh, wonderful.
Directed by Henry Wishkamper. And that was one of the inspirations for going back and doing the Scandinavians as well, that Connor's version of Dance of Death was really very contemporary and really amazing, and showed that Strindberg has a lot going for him with minor tweaking. Of course, I did some major tweaking with Ghosts, but still, I think there's a lot to be said for these folks, and I think we don't want to just relegate them to the libraries of the world.
Absolutely. I think that that's completely normal for anybody who's studied theater to see these plays and think of them as like dust-covered gems.
Yeah, dusty old classics, which really don't have much pertinence today, but that's kind of often my goal, is to bring Kafka and O'Neill and Ibsen and a lot of different people more to the fore and show how relevant it is to contemporary audiences.
Indeed. What I find interesting about the adaptation of Ghosts you have going on is that it is basically the story.
It is.
But with your touch added on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about how the self-referential aspects that you added to it contribute to the show?
In the original script, Ibsen has Mrs. Alving, the central character of Ghosts, being lambasted by Pastor Manders for having become enlightened by various revolutionary books that she is reading. Probably at Ibsen's in Ibsen's day, this would be Darwin and Marx and proto-Freud, that she was reading progressive literature,
right,
that had thrown her past the idea of church teaching. Which Manders is incredibly pissed at. So I kept thinking, well, what are these books? What are contemporary books that would really lend one to be completely enlightened in a way that would blow them out of the reality of their time?
Because it's harder to be shocking nowadays.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was thinking, was it porn? I mean, like, what is it, you know? And I struck upon the idea that Mrs. Alving is reading Ibsen, that she has literally been reading the plays of Ibsen has discovered, and as progressive as Ibsen is, and as feminist as Ibsen is, she's discovered the play Ghosts, in which she's a character, and realized that everything she does on this stage is actually preordained by Henrik Ibsen. And she, in a very Perrindellian way, another semi-dusty old playwright, is trying to find a way out, trying to find an alternative conclusion and another direction that she can, a choice she can make that can steer the play in another direction. So that was one of the ideas that immediately led towards meta theater with my adaptation. The other major one being that in order to do the play, you need about five exits to actually do it naturalistically. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh my God, how am I going to find five different doors? Do we really need all these exits? And just realizing that everybody just comes in one door and exits another door. So we just bracket the stage with a door that says entrance and a door that says exit. And all entrances come through the entrance door. All exits go through the exit door. Even when people are like in the naturalism world of Ibsen, people are going into the room and coming back and going, everyone's making this circuitous gallivant through through the entire space in order to get back on stage. I think it works incredibly well. I've asked many audience members whether that's confusing at all, and everyone always says, no, we totally understand that it doesn't really matter where they're coming from or where they're going to. They're off stage. So that was another solution that lent itself well to the metatheatrical concept.
Yes. You have a runway style set over there, whereas Ibsen's plays, or at least his prose plays, always begin with very elaborate description of the house, which, while it can provide all sorts of character information.
Yeah, this is pretty far from realism. It's mm-hmm. very far from any kind of authentic 19th century home. Mm-hmm. It's very much played in the round or the runway, as you say, and with a very intimate setting, kind of increasing the pressure cooker of the play. Mm-hmm. It's nice that everybody in the audience sits no more than like 10 feet away from the actors.
Mm-hmm. So what are the sorts of issues in Ghosts that you wanted people to connect with? Because I think that's something that's always very important. Is you said that Ghosts has a climax that interests you.
There's many climaxes that interest me.
Many climaxes.
Yeah. I mean, each act is like, oh my God! Yeah, it's incredible.
But thematically, I think you could connect Ghosts with Rosmer's Home pretty easily. Mm-hmm. So just why this play, particularly for us now?
To me, well, two things. One is the essence of freedom and how much of Ibsen really hammered away at the idea of at what point are we free and how much choice do we have, mm-hmm. and you know how much do we have to maintain doctrine and order and structure, and how much you know, independence do we have? Mm-hmm. Certainly bouncing off of Nora in Doll's House, who mm-hmm. finds one a real exit, compared to Hedda Gabler, who finds a different kind of exit. I think Ghosts is really fascinating, and that's another feminist play. It's very much a play about women and their choices, and yet in the world of Ibsen's Ghosts, it doesn't matter what Mrs. Alving decides. It doesn't matter what the hell she decides. She is stuck, and she's not getting out. And I think the tragedy of that is mm-hmm. pretty devastating. So I think the element of freedom and illusion are two of the things that really fascinated mm-hmm. me about Ghosts, in terms of in what ways are we deluding ourselves to think that we have freedom, and in what ways are there life lies, like they talk about in Wild Duck? Mm-hmm. At what point are there lies that we just hoodwink ourselves into buying into and continuing on the path that we have preordained for us? The other aspect, I think, of Ghosts that really fascinated me is just the sense of mortality, that Oswald, the son, has a fatal illness, basically. And I guess just as I'm getting older, I'm starting to think about how much our mortality is really mm-hmm. it's really present. How much I'm going to? What am I going to leave behind? That those kind of things. I've been teaching neo-futurism for 30 years and writing and directing, I don't know, 60 shows or something. But theater is an ephemeral art, and so I'm really trying to figure out what is my legacy and what do I leave behind, and how do I wrestle with my own mortality as well.
Well, I do think that Oswald's revelation that he is suffering from syphilis is definitely one of the most moving moments in an Ibsen play, and I'm interested in what you just said about continuing neo-futurism. Is Ibsen's Ghosts a neo-futurist play?
It's become one of the shows I've done in more recent years that are a hybrid between neo-futurism and more traditional productions. It's not purely neo-futurist because within neo-futurism we don't play characters at all. We acknowledge the audience, which we do a bit in Ghosts. So it's kind of this hybrid between some people on stage and Ibsen's Ghosts are characters mm-hmm. who have no awareness of the audience, and then other people on stage in Ibsen's Ghosts are aware of the audience and have some awareness of the script and of their preordained destiny, but no one, Carolyn Hordeman is not playing Carolyn Horteman. So in that way, it's not neo-futurist. So it's kind of this hybrid between neo-futurist aesthetics.
I suppose I should have defined that term, actually, but it's the sort of thing that too much light makes the baby go blind, and the other sort of shows that you're very well known for. Speaking of the actors, I'd like to know a little bit about what your approach was in the rehearsal room, and in the first place, where you found the actors. I believe Carolyn Horteman is involved with a neo-futurist offshoot in Montreal.
No, not Carolyn.
No?
Catherine Lavoie.
Oh, Catherine Lavoie. Okay.
The woman who plays Regina, I asked one of... well, this is another meta-theatrical concept for ghosts, is that there is a maid who, in Ibsen's original, has learned French in anticipation of going away with young Oswald to Paris someday. I thought it would be a really funny idea if I cast a native French speaker in that role, so that her first language is French, but then she speaks all this French on stage, and then halfway through the play it's explained that, she's learned French in order to go to Paris. So I thought that was a pretty funny idea. And so I have a company up in Montreal called Les Neos, who perform only in French. And so the idea of inviting one of the actresses down to play Regina came about. I invited Catherine, and she came down for 3 months, which is pretty wonderful. Carolyn, I know from work at the Goodman and all over town. Kirk Anderson, I directed in a stage reading at the Goodman, and I've seen him do numerous shows. Steve Walker was actually in my original show, The Last 2 Minutes of the Complete Works of Henrik Ibsen, as well as other plays I've directed. And Gage Wallace came in through auditions, and I'm absolutely thrilled. The kid's brilliant, and he's got a really wonderful future.
I agree. So why don't you talk to me about the balancing of the pathos and the more humorous moments, because the Pastor Manders character is one that shows up a lot in Ibsen, and the version in Ghosts that we see of him is a lot more extreme on the word I use in my review is jerk-ass scale.
Jerk-ass?
Yeah.
Indeed.
As opposed to a character like Kroll, who gets a little bit more respect, or Brand. Was that something that you had to play around with, is balancing these moments where Oswald has to reveal that he has syphilis, these very heart-wrenching moments, along with taking Pastor Manders to a further extreme, and the other character, Jacob Engstrand? Is it something that you had to balance, experiment with?
One of the great luxuries I've had in my now... long career is that at this point I'm able to cast my shows before I write them. So I can ask actors if they will sign on to a show that they can't read. And thank God at this point I can ask people of these actors' stature to do that, and they'll say yes. So that's been great. So for instance, I had Steve Walker in mind for Pastor Manders from the get-go, from the first sentence I wrote on the page. And I know that Steve is excellent at playing these big, loud, blowhard characters. And Manders is essentially that. But I was able to kind of heighten his dominance to a point of just absurdity. So that I knew Steve's also very funny. So I was able to kind of heighten that character to an extreme where quite a bit of his dialogue is quite amusing. He's constantly in shock and outrage at everything he's seeing that is contradicting his orthodoxy. So I get to experiment with... I had a long list of about 200 different expletives of various degrees, usually religiously based, but to have Pastor Manders say "Oy vey" is quite wonderful. So I knew that Steve would be able to be very funny. I usually don't worry about the comedy in my shows. It tends to take care of itself for some reason. But to me, the heart of the play is very much in the pathos. So I've always explored this, that I love this smashing together of pathos and hilarity, and throwing the audience off base so that they don't quite know how to respond at any given moment. Is this a comedy? Is it a tragedy? Very much in K, my adaptation of Kafka's The Trial, those things sat very much side by side. Strange Interlude, very much so as well. And I really believe by heightening the comedy, you kind of increase the devastation of the tragedy at the same time. And that's basically been my modus operandi as I've gone through a number of these last, I don't know, decade of shows.
I think it works. And the odd thing about Ghosts is that, in a way, it is open-ended, but Mrs. Alving's choices are both very bad.
Right. I mean, any way it goes, at the end of... I mean, I don't know if we give it away, but at the end of Ghosts, Mrs. Alving's choices don't matter, sadly. Mm-hmm. I mean, she has a number of choices, and we certainly played them out in Ibsen's Ghosts. But... none of them, as you say, are any really better than others, because the script is the script. Ibsen laid out the plot, the characters are established, and no matter what she does, that play goes on over and over and over again.
Now, something that you included is a sort of in the program is an amusing list of excerpts from some of the responses critics gave when this show first was publicly performed in London.
Didn't go well.
They were not pleased. you might even find it amusing to read one or two of your favorites.
People like one review said, an open drain, a loathsome sore unbandaged, a dirty act done publicly, a laser house with all its doors and windows open, candid foulness. I have no idea what a laser house is in the 19th century. My favorites are when they actually attack Ibsen and call him a cranky fanatic, a crazy cranky being, consistently dirty. And then they even go so far as to say that the audience, they attack the audience itself that would actually come to the show. 97% of the people who go see Ghosts are nasty-minded people who find the discussion of nasty subjects to their taste in exact proportion to their nastiness. And that's the review from Sporting and Dramatic News. You know, I mean, the crazy fanatic comes from a magazine called Truth. Wished it wouldn't it be great to get reviews like that today? I would just be thrilled if our contemporary critics used such incredibly flowery prose to just lambaste everything I did. It's pretty incredible.
Very rarely there's cause to do that. What do you think? Why did they feel so threatened by this play? It wasn't even new by the time it reached London. It was like 12 years old.
It still dealt with all sorts of things that people, you know, everyone was aware of, but nobody spoke of. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to talk about, syphilis and sex and blasphemy and, I mean, sleeping around. All these things were totally taboo still by the time it hit the London stage. And it might have been one of those bandwagon situations where, hey, let's see who can outdo each other to, like, lambaste Ibsen and Ghosts.
Infectious diseases can be a little bit harder to make operatic, although people at the time period were doing that. you've mentioned a lot that Ibsen has all sorts of great ideas that actually span a wide variety of styles. And... Neo-futurism, the sort of concept that you use, borrows from a whole lot of different modernist ideas, and of course Kafka is in some ways quite different from Ibsen at certain points in his career, but more similar at others. Why don't you talk a little bit about who this play is for, because I don't think it's necessary to actually know the names of the modernist movements to be able to connect with it, but who is it that you would ideally like to see in the audience for Ibsen's Ghosts?
I mean, I think, like most of my work, it tends to appeal to young, adventurous theatergoers. In general, it's people who are up for an experiment, up for redefining what theater is, and are not coming in with a lot of preconceived notions and rules as to what one is supposed to do on stage, much less with a play by Ibsen. I think the people who come in with very few preconceived notions and are really up for a very fun and adventurous ride are really who I'm appealing to. I think those people who are more learned in theater also get a lot out of it, but mm-hmm. at the same time, for instance, Too Much Light or a lot of my more populist work appeals to people who have never been to the theater at all before. So mm-hmm. I really try to... my work naturally engages young, adventurous people.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating to be at both ends of the spectrum simultaneously because on one hand, the sort of talk of modernism, symbolism, naturalism is the height of academia. But on the other hand, it sounds like new artists, people who are just starting out or people who are new to theater accidentally stumble upon that.
Right, to say nothing of futurism and Dada and surrealism and Fluxus and Happenings and John Cage and all these very highfalutin, challenging ideas. I've always prided myself in my work being a popular, I created the Neo-Futurists as a popular experimental theater. And that's really what it is. You don't need to have a lot of, or any knowledge coming in the door to enjoy the show. And yet it does point to a higher level of academe, which if you wish to, you can look into and study and write your master's thesis about. So it kind of runs the gamut. And I've always been very proud that my work has appealed to every different swath of where you're coming to theater.
Mm-hmm. So you founded the Neo-Futurists in 1988.
Yeah.
Before I was born.
Yeah.
So can you tell me a little bit about how you've seen the theater industry or the theater production change since that time, whether you think that you've been influential in that or whether styles come and go?
I mean, I definitely feel like Neo-Futurism has had a fairly substantial impact on American theater. It may not be always touted as such, but I do see a lot more experimentation with classic texts. I see more recognition of the audience. I see more breaking of the fourth wall in general and people playing themselves. I see a greater acceptance and understanding of alternative forms that I've experimented a lot with in my work here at the Neo-Futurarium. And really my goal for this decade of my career is to infiltrate the world of the playwright and start winning awards and getting national productions of my plays without directing them, and then kind of slowly subverting the world of the playwright. Because I've often felt that the way America holds the playwright so dear is just so wrong it's really a... theater is a living art, not mm-hmm. something that you write in black and white, put on a page, and then everyone reveres and says absolutely every word that is there. I think the words on the page mm-hmm. to the life on the stage, there's a huge transition there. There's a huge translation that goes through a director and a cast and an audience, and that is where the living art comes mm-hmm. in. So I've been in this decade trying to write plays and send them out into the world, and I've been fairly successful in this. See if I can kind of get a foot in the door of the traditional American playwright role, and then subvert that and insert more and more of my neo-futurist ideas, and see what becomes of the American theater landscape.
And the great thing about Chicago is that we have companies that specialize in all eras and genres. We have Light Opera Works, and we have The House and Oracle and the Neo-Futurists.
We got 200 theater companies in Chicago, and they sure do run the gamut, absolutely, and it's wonderful.
Well, thank you very much for sitting down to talk to me. I really did enjoy Ibsen's Ghosts, and I hope that other people go to see it. The play is being produced by Mary Archie Theater Company in their space, Angel Island, which is at 735 West Sheridan Road, and it runs until December 20th.
Yes, indeed. Yes, it's a wonderful, intimate house. It is Mary Archie's final year of 30 because they're losing the space. As I say in the program, actually, the play is set in a moribund theater in its 30th year on the north side of Chicago in a space that is soon to become bike storage for luxury condos. Mm-hmm. So that's sadly the fate of that space.
So talk about ephemeral.
Yeah, really. So so definitely come celebrate Mary Archie and its 30 years by coming to see Ibsen's Ghosts.
They do deserve the support. Well, thank you, Greg.
Sure, thank you.